Hughes versus Talent Energy Marketing is the third case of the term that dealt with energy issues. And Hughes is essentially the mirror image of FERC versus Electric Power Supply Association, this time testing whether states ventured too far into FERC's exclusive realm under the Federal Power Act. Both the states of Maryland and New Jersey adopted programs to solicit wholesale power plant development and construction supported by long-term contracts at guaranteed prices. The prices were essentially cost plus reasonable return on equity. But the projects were to participate in wholesale power markets run by what's called the PJM. PJM is an independent system operator operating in the Mid-Atlantic region stretching between New Jersey, Delaware, Washington, D.C., and across to Chicago. So between New Jersey and Chicago is the territory of the power grid managed by PJM. The key issue in this case was whether the Federal Power Act preempts states from offering guaranteed contract prices to help incentivize the construction of wholesale power plants that were participating in organized competitive wholesale power markets. Both the Third Circuit and the Fourth Circuit determined that these similar procurement programs in these two states were preempted by the Federal Power Act. Interestingly enough, the court decided to take certiorari on this case shortly after the briefing was concluded in EPSA. Actually, it was shortly before the oral argument in EPSA was taken. And I think the court was possibly concerned that it might not have had enough of a majority in EPSA to strike the balance and the rule that it was looking to strike this term. So it took the Hughes case as well, and the result is as I'm about to present. So we discussed the competitive wholesale markets, that the ISOs and RTOs ran the markets and encouraged wholesale supply to meet exactly consumer demand for power. But the question some states faced, including Maryland and New Jersey, was what happens if the ISO tariffs and the rules and the market conditions run by these ISOs were not doing enough to incentivize development of new power plants to help keep prices reasonable. And the supply-demand problem in the electric industry in the United States is that it's not a perfectly efficient and elastic market. There are problems with generation being in the wrong place compared to the load centers. There's not enough transmission lines to get power from where it needs to be, from where it's generated to where it needs to be. For example, there are wind farms in the Midwest generating cheap wind power, but inadequate transmission lines to deliver the power to the load centers in the Northeast. Likewise, there are cheap hydropower plants in Canada and along the waters between the Canada and the U.S. border that could generate cheap power, but there's insufficient power lines to deliver power to the load centers in the Northeast. So what we have is an inefficient market where, because of structural constraints in the marketplace, the market is not able to respond necessarily to price signals. Both Maryland and New Jersey tried to solve this problem. And in their opinion, the ISO, namely PJM, was not doing enough to incentivize wholesale power plants to be located where Maryland and New Jersey thought those power plants should be located. So to solve this problem, their states, with the public utility commissioners of their states, mandated that the local electric utilities in Maryland and New Jersey enter into contracts called contracts for differences with the winning bidders of these power plant projects. Now, a contract for differences would essentially guarantee that the power generators that won the bids would be paid a guaranteed amount. You could call it cost of constructing a power plant plus a reasonable rate of return over a long term. So that would be the guaranteed price that the programs in Maryland and New Jersey attempted to give these new power generators through the utilities using contracts for differences. But what they did is they told the power plant operators that won these contracts to participate as any other wholesale generator in the PJM market. But they would, under the contract for differences, be paid the difference between the market price for their power and the contract price for their power. So when the price of power rose in the marketplace higher, then they would pay back the difference between their guaranteed contract price and the wholesale market price to the electric utility, which then would pass those savings on to consumers. On the other hand, when wholesale market conditions would drop and prices would drop below the guaranteed price, the utility in the states would make up the differences through the contract for differences and give those power generators the guaranteed contract amount. That's how the contracts for differences were structured in the states of Maryland and New Jersey. The wholesale generators play in the wholesale marketplace, but they get the difference through the local utility. This structure was designed to make sure that the new plants would get a guaranteed amount. And that structure was intended to help the winning bidders be able to obtain project financing or debt financing in the project finance marketplace. Now, in that case, as a result of this program, wholesale power generators sued the states of Maryland and New Jersey to challenge these programs. They claimed that FERC, in approving the ISO tariffs, had preempted the states and that the states had no business in this marketplace. Oddly enough, in this case, unlike EPSA, FERC was not a party to the cases in Maryland or New Jersey. But the Supreme Court, as it often does, asked the FERC to submit a brief and take a position on how the court, how FERC, in FERC's judgment, would resolve the case. FERC, of course, took the view that the wholesale markets preempted the states from acting as it did in this case. The Supreme Court, in an 8-0 decision authored by Justice Ginsburg on April 19th, affirmed the state's actions confirmed that the state's actions in Maryland and New Jersey were preempted by FERC in what was implied preemption. And the court said that states may not seek to achieve ends, however legitimate, through regulatory means that intrude on FERC's authority over interstate wholesale rates, as Maryland and New Jersey did in these cases. States cannot regulate in a domain Congress assigned to FERC and then require FERC to accommodate the state's intrusion. The court concluded that states were attempting to fiddle with the wholesale power markets by guaranteeing wholesale power generators be compensated at rates that differed from what the plants could possibly be paid in the PJM power market. The Federal Power Act leaves no room, the court said, either for direct state regulation of interstate wholesale power prices or for regulation that would indirectly achieve the same result. So, quoting a major Federal Power Act case called Mississippi Power and Light, the court in this case emphasized that once FERC sets a wholesale power rate, a state may not conclude that the FERC-approved wholesale rates are unreasonable. The Mississippi case makes clear that states interfere with FERC's authority by disregarding interstate wholesale rates FERC has deemed as unjust and unreasonable even when states exercise their traditional authority over retail rates, or, as in Maryland and New Jersey, in-state generation. By the way, if you take a look at the Federal Power Act, there is an exemption expressed for the states that it's reserved for the states to determine the location and manner of construction of in-state power plants. Now, most people believe that language in the Federal Power Act really relates to things like environmental laws or building permits or zoning laws. But nonetheless, in these cases, the states of Maryland and New Jersey tried to point to that language to say they were only doing what they're allowed to do under the language in the Federal Power Act reserved to the states. In Talen, the court also said states may regulate within the domain Congress assigned to the states, even when state laws incidentally affect areas where within FERC's domain. And they quoted the Learjet case for that proposition. States may encourage development of new or clean generation, including tax incentives, land grants, direct subsidies, construction of state-owned generation facilities, or re-regulation of the energy sector. States still have the right to take actions untethered to a generator's wholesale market participation. And so long as a state does not condition payment of funds on capacity, project capacity, clearing the auction, as in the ISO auction, in a forward capacity market, the state program would not be fatally flawed. So here, as the Learjet case teaches, states may regulate within areas Congress left to the states, such as in-state regulation of power generation, but states may not seek to achieve ends, however legitimate, through regulatory means that intrude on FERC's authority over interstate wholesale rates. The difference, as Learjet shows, is on measures aimed directly at interstate purchasers, as Maryland and New Jersey, as Maryland and New Jersey's programs were. So, in other words, the outcome in this case turns on the target at which the states aimed. And here, because the states were essentially aiming at the wholesale markets run by the ISO, namely run by PJM, which was doing so pursuant to FERC-approved tariffs, programs were targeting the part that was preempted. Note again that the Learjet case was a Natural Gas Act case, but it's important to note that relevant portions of the Natural Gas Act are identical to the relevant analogous portions of the Federal Power Act. And the Supreme Court often uses Natural Gas Act cases to support principles in its disposition of Federal Power Act cases and vice versa, especially where the language is identical. So Justice Sotomayor in this case concurred, writing to emphasize the collaborative federalism at stake in the Talen case. She said that the court's decision recognizes the importance of protecting states' ability to contribute within their regulatory domain to the Federal Power Act's goal of ensuring a sustainable supply of efficient and price-effective energy. And she said collaborative federalism involves careful balancing between federal and states' rights over energy policy. Justice Thomas, concurring, said he would not have found implied preemption, that the state's actions violated the Federal Power Act outright. And his language is where you can find the phrase, by fiddling with the effective price that the generator receives for its wholesale sales, Maryland has regulated wholesale sales no less than does direct rate setting. So the problem, Justice Thomas said, is that Maryland was trying to fiddle with the wholesale prices. Taken together, These cases show that the Supreme Court was trying to avoid setting any bright lines, and that they believed each case will have to be looked at in the future on a case-by-case basis. Another interesting point about Talon is that the court has said that bilateral contracts are okay. For example, there's another Supreme Court case of several years ago called Morgan Stanley versus Smirconish, and that case dealt with the approval of bilateral contracts. This is an important point. Again, I said earlier that at issue in Talon were contracts for differences that the states ordered local electric utilities to enter into between the local utility and the selected winning bidders for the wholesale power generators. So they won these so-called contracts for differences, but those contracts were not bilateral contracts. Again, the contracts for differences simply said that the wholesale power generators should go play in the wholesale markets operated by the PJM, and they would simply be paid the difference from the approved rates in the market compared to the contract rates from the local electric utilities. In these contracts, the developer doesn't actually sell the capacity and the energy from the contracts for differences to the local electric utilities, which are counterparties to those contracts for differences. Rather, the wholesale power generators would sell their capacity and energy into the wholesale markets, and the contract for difference in this case was really just used as a netting tool to ensure that they made a guaranteed payment, and no more than a guaranteed payment, to the wholesale power generators. In that sense, if the market price was higher, then the generator would owe a payment back to the utility. But if the market price was lower, then the utility would owe a payment to the generator. And this is what Justice Thomas meant with the states fiddling with the wholesale power price. It's important to note in this sense that what the states, and this is, if you read the case, it's really an unspoken theme, if you will, that what the states were really trying to do, the courts seem to think, was that the states were trying to drive down the wholesale price of power in the markets operated by PJM. So that's why the states were supporting the development of these power plants and telling the power plants to go play in the PJM markets at market prices. So by adding new power generation to the markets using a tool that competitive market participants did not have at their disposal, such as the contracts for differences, these generators, these selected generators, were able to play in a way that other generators in the wholesale markets could not play. So on the one hand, a cynical read of the case that was brought by the plaintiffs would be that the plaintiffs were trying to protect their higher prices of power. But in fairness, what was really going on is the other wholesale power generators operating in the PJM marketplace were being harmed by these programs in Maryland and New Jersey because they didn't have contracts for differences supporting them. They didn't have the ability to enjoy guaranteed payments the way the selected generators in Maryland and New Jersey could count on the contracts for differences to guarantee the wholesale price of power. So that's what's going on in this case. Meanwhile, when it comes to bilateral contracts, which are still allowed, and the court in Talon made clear that it was doing nothing to disturb the legality of bilateral contracts. Bilateral contracts involve a power plant owner-operator selling capacity or energy or some other product such as ancillary services or regulation service to third-party contract or counterparties, bilateral counterparties to contracts through direct. So the actual products of the power plants are being sold bilaterally in a contract directly to the buyer, unlike the contracts for differences. So that's the key difference for what's going on here in these cases. Now, if you you could conceivably take away and say that there can no longer be such things as contracts for differences, which at sometimes contracts for differences are really another name for a hedging tool or a hedging device. And that's not a proper reading of this case. The court is not saying that hedging contracts or any kind of contract for differences are illegal after this case. What the court is saying simply in Talon is that these programs, supported by the states of Maryland and New Jersey with contracts for differences, these specific contracts, the contracts at issue in these cases, are prohibited. But in the future, counsel will need to understand what a contract for differences can look like in order to pass muster. And hedging contracts are examples of contracts that will most likely pass muster in the future. As long as the contract that might be called a contract for differences does not involve the state controlling the bidding strategy in the PJM or controlling the compensation that a generator is going to be paid by participating in the markets like PJM or other ISO markets, these contracts will probably pass muster. But they will need to be examined on a case-by-case basis, and counsel will need to look at these contracts carefully. So it's important to understand what the court did not do in these cases. The other thing that I think is worth talking about, especially when reading the Talon case, and this perspective is different from what you saw in the media and the legal trade press immediately after this decision was issued. Some screaming headlines said that the Supreme Court slapped down the states, or that the states were spanked for intruding improperly in the federal province. I think the decision takes a very careful and respectful tone, attempting to balance cooperation between the FERC and the states. And I wrote an article shortly after this decision was issued, which you can find on my website. And I don't use a screaming headline to say what the states were, what the court said about what the states did in this case. There are many state programs that would pass muster in the future in the nature of supporting clean energy and renewables. For instance, renewable portfolio standards, state programs like tax incentives, other kinds of development incentives, would likely pass muster going forward. So the court's language with Justice Sotomayor, Justice Thomas, and Justice Kagan writing very carefully in these decisions, I think emphasize the need for Justice Ginsburg. I think that their opinions really emphasize the need for the states and the federal government to cooperate together. And FERC won in this case, and even though FERC wasn't a party, that FERC's authority as a preemption matter over the independent system operators prevailed in this case. But FERC has to be mindful that the states have an important role. Likewise, the states, after 1OK versus Learjet, have an important role, but they can't target or aim at directly matters that are within the province of FERC.